Welcome to the Global Alliance podcast. My name is Jill McLay, and I'm the policy liaison for the Global Alliance. It's October, which means we have entered the month during which World Mental Health Day is celebrated. October 10th is World Mental Health Day. The World Health Organization began observing this day in 1992 to raise awareness of mental health issues around the world and to mobilize efforts in support of mental health. We at the Global Alliance wanted to take this opportunity to draw attention to the millions of adults and children fleeing war and man-made and natural disasters. I'm fortunate to have with me today Dr. Virginia Gil-Rivas, Associate Professor of Psychology at the University of North Carolina at Charlotte and board member for the Global Alliance. Welcome to our podcast, Dr. Gil-Rivas.
Hi, Jill. Glad to be with you.
Dr. Gil-Rivas, we know that there is an unprecedented number of refugees in the world today. Can you give us just a basic overview of the situation, like how many refugees there are in the world today and where they are, who they are?
Yes. So according to the UN High Commission on Refugees, by the end of 2016, we had over 17 million people around the world who were either refugees or were experiencing refugee-like situations. And strikingly, what we find is that those numbers have been increasing steadily since 2011. The majority of those refugees are actually in low to mid-income countries. And for many of them, they are being detained under really poor living conditions, typically would be detention centers, refugee camps, many of which do not have sort of the basic resources or the basic living conditions to promote health and well-being of those individuals and families. Unfortunately, as well, is that very few refugees are able or willing to return voluntarily to their home countries, in part because many of them left their home countries due to war, civil unrest, and conditions that really put their lives in danger. And those conditions typically are not resolved for many years. The challenges that many of them face is that they are provided with very few opportunities for reintegrating into the local communities where they are now hosted, as there are very few opportunities for them to become naturalized citizens, gain permits to be employed. And as many of us have seen recently, there are worldwide some anti-immigrant refugee sentiments in many communities.
So you've told us a little bit about some of the challenges that the refugees face. Can you speak a little bit more to kind of just what happens during the process of migration and resettlement and how that can affect the mental health and well-being of refugees?
Yes, I think that we need to think about the experiences of refugees beginning pre-migration. As I was mentioning, many of them already left their countries of origins under conditions of exposure to traumatic events that certainly have increased the likelihood, drove them to leave their countries, but increased the likelihood that they will have difficulties. But in many cases, it's not those pre-migration issues that become really relevant in the development of mental health disorders. But once they are resettled, many of them are now again exposed to adverse conditions, poverty, violence, unemployment, isolation, discrimination, lack of access to resources and services that are needed to adjust well, cope well, and overall really unsafe living conditions that, again, increase the likelihood of mental health difficulties.
So, Dr. Gil-Rivas, the scope and the magnitude of the refugee crisis makes it really difficult to think about how to go about helping to address mental health issues among refugees. I mean, how do we begin to address this challenge? Where do we start?
Well, I think that the WHO has provided some really nice guidance in helping us think at the macro as well as the micro level, how we begin to address some of these issues. Certainly, I think the WHO has reminded us of what we mean by mental health in thinking about definitions of mental health, moving us away from simply thinking about the absence of symptoms to thinking about conditions and in which people can thrive, can live their potential, can cope, can be productive, and have meaningful lives. So that brings us back to thinking about multiple factors at multiple levels that create those conditions for wellness that will minimize the likelihood of mental health difficulties. The WHO has endorsed two frameworks that I think are very relevant as well for addressing not just mental health, but also the mental health and challenges that refugees are facing. One of them is the social determinants of health framework that really sort of thinks about a structural, institutional level factors that contribute to mental health, and the more intermediate factors that will contribute to mental health. And so thinking about the structural level, thinking about policies around immigration, about immigrant rights, policies around funding and integration of refugees into these hosting communities. The other framework that is also very useful, and it has been employed for addressing the needs of individuals facing major or mass traumatic events, is the ecological framework that really helps us understand and identify factors at multiple levels that can foster resilience, positive adjustment of individuals, families, and communities that are facing adverse conditions. I think these two frameworks really can help us, can help guide our efforts and think at multiple levels of intervention, away from a simple focus on the individual to begin to consider conditions and factors in communities, countries that create either the conditions for wellness or the conditions that increase the likelihood of mental health difficulties.
So you mentioned policy, mm-hmm. and you've talked about the importance of reframing some of these topics to really focus on creating conditions that promote well-being. How can policy help create the conditions that promote well-being?
I think that policies, changes in policies are essential, in part because those policies will guide where we make investments, will guide the approach and attitudes that the society at large will have for addressing the needs of refugees. And so without those kinds of investments, both in supporting and creating the structures and making the resources available for refugees to thrive, to experience conditions of wellness, they also send a message to the larger society in the importance of creating a welcoming context for refugees in thinking about actions across multiple levels that will allow for conditions in the society, in particular building the idea of social capital, social integration of refugees into their host communities.
Right, which is so important. I mean, we've definitely all seen in the news stories from Germany and from the United States about that really show the varying attitudes that people hold mm-hmm. about refugees and mm-hmm. kind of some of this fear that they're taking resources away. Have you seen any examples or do you have any ideas about how to go about creating those social norms that they really move beyond just kind of tolerating refugees mm-hmm. to moving towards, as you said, being a welcoming society?
Yes. I think one of the examples that I can see, and certainly this is a higher income country, but we also see it in other countries, is the example of Canada, where we have seen policies that attempt to integrate refugees immediately into the Canadian society, both creating opportunities for them to come in, find employment. They are usually having resources when they come in immediately to be able to address their needs and facilitate that process of just meeting their basic needs while engaging community organizations, faith-based organizations, government organizations that really are aiming to support those individuals and families in the integration into the Canadian society.
Wonderful. And lastly, for our listeners out there engaged in research, you know, what do we need to know? What questions need to be answered to help improve the well-being of refugees?
I think to me there is the issue of questions, but there is the issue also of having efforts that are clearly guided by an ecological and wellness approach. I think over the last decade or so, greater awareness worldwide of the need to focus on wellness and conditions that promote mental health has come to the forefront. Unfortunately, we continue to have intervention and policy efforts that either are narrowly focused or are simply focused on a treatment approach, dealing with issues once the issues have emerged, rather than having a prevention approach. So one is, how can we make sure that although we say, for instance, the social determinants of health approach and the socio-ecological framework are crucial for addressing the needs of refugees, how do we make sure that our interventions at multiple levels are guided by those principles, by those ideas? And also, thinking of the need to design those interventions and evaluate those interventions to better understand what are the components that are active, that are leading to better adjustment, that are helping facilitate the integration of individuals and families into communities. So greater investments in not just the interventions, but greater investments in the evaluation of those interventions to understand for whom, under what conditions, the interventions are most effective.
Wonderful. Thank you, Dr. Gil-Rivas, for your time. And thank you to our listeners for taking time out of your day to join us. Remember, October 10th is World Mental Health Day. It's an opportunity to raise awareness in your community about refugee concerns and to help promote positive action towards promoting well-being.